Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 79 of the International Education Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Chatham, and our contributors this week are
Flora Wong
and
Layla Muna.
Thank you both for being here. I'm looking forward to hearing about the news of the week and what you thought about them. So Flora, why don't you start us off?
Yeah, happy to do. So I'm going to share a news called A Rise of Intra-Regional Mobility and Closer to Home Destinations. The news talk about the new trend of students' academic mobility during the pandemic, but I do believe this trend will continue to grow and gain worse popularity in the next few years. So there are 2 points about that. The first point is traditionally, the international student, normally from the global south, they prefer to go to the global south for degree program or to learn a new foreign languages. But during the pandemic, some countries' border has been shut down and the university stores were closed. So students will go to the neighbor countries for international education. And there are some cases like they call the regional hub cities like Malaysia in the South East Asia, or students will go to Dubai, the city of Dubai in the Middle East. Well, the second point is, in the meantime, the universities and the local government, they are aware of the increasing popularity options. So they purposefully to target those aspiring students from the within region. In the meantime, the local government and the universities, they also try to find the solutions or they to release the new policies to make effort and make a commitment to attract those international students. And I think that the new trend, because student will prefer, or the student and parents will prefer to go to the local neighborhood as the destination. And this part, the student will dilute the students go to the overseas, the traditional countries like the US, the UK, Australia, and Canada.
I this is striking a lot of chords with me, and I'm eager to talk about it. And I'm also eager to hear from Layla. Layla, what article did you bring in this week?
Thank you, Daniel. The article that I found discusses that an increasing number of higher ed institutions or international students, in the UK are dropping out soon after enrollment in order to accept employment offers, especially in the care sector. The reason why is because of changes to the skilled worker visa system. So applicants are no longer required to hold a degree level qualification to apply. This route offers a cheaper and faster pathway to full-time employment in the UK compared to the graduate route, which requires students to pay expensive course fees, maintenance during the course of their time before entering the job market. But this has and will continue to have a major effect on university finances and the population of university graduates. From a marketing perspective, the job market is already capitalizing on this change. I wanted to share a quick example from Lex and Law shared in this article. They tweeted, "Attention all international students, new vacancies for care workers and health professionals in the UK with instant job placement. The only thing needed is for you to switch your visa with a skilled worker visa." And so I think that this is really interesting, and I'm looking forward to discussing potential proactive solutions that higher education institutions can take to influence retention and promote the benefits of completing your degree.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, it's an interesting circumstance. It's like a whole different category of competition for universities. Well, what do you think? These two articles weren't intentionally similar. There is some element of, I think, a regional footprint and a regional impact. So what do you think, Flora and Layla? What stands out to you from these?
Well, I think these two news will make the recruitment of international students make a competition and make it more fierce to recruit amount number of the international student for each universities around the world.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think that for a long time, the traditional countries that Flora mentioned, for example, the US, the UK, Canada, have been at the top of this competition for so long. But when regional countries start to show promise, and when the UK starts to implement policies that make higher education not as attractive, it really speaks to these institutions needing to work to hold their place rather than assume that that place will always be there.
That's a great point. I think too often in the industry, we look at really famous, well-established, highly ranked schools, and we kind of think about them perhaps sometimes with a little jealousy. But the thing that they have to do, those famous, well-established, highly regarded schools, they have to reinvest in their own reputation in order to hold that position. And the same thing is true on a national scale. When we think about the UK or any of the countries that might be participating in a regional hub, they are required to make steps that make the national opportunities attractive. That's one of the key differences between marketing in the US versus a lot of these other countries that have been mentioned today, is that there's, in many of these other countries, there are national governmental bodies that support the marketing of education internationally. In the United States, we don't have a national, federally funded federal department that goes out and represents international, represents education on the international stage. So that's a major difference structurally. On these regional hubs, I'm thinking, you know, maybe we would see less mobility globally and more mobility regionally, which is what they intend to do. And I question what the impacts would be if that sticks. You know, for 1 year, that's not going to cause a major blip to the global norms. But if it persists and grows over 2 or 3 or 4 years, what would it look like then if there's a well-established region, sort of this regional hub concept?
I think for one, it would majorly decrease the diversity within higher education institutions if it majorly is depending on regional attraction. You don't get that diversity from across the world per se.
Well, I've been thinking that another topic, as we talk about for the academic mobility, is the climate change. So think about that. If we have so many regional hubs, then students, they don't have to travel like long distance for academic achievement. Maybe they're easy to get there. Like some countries, they have a direct connected by land, or like they have the maritime border. So it's kind of a new beneficial way for the climate change.
That's a really good point, Flora. I also see the connection that students are looking for the path of least resistance almost. It doesn't make sense to go across the world if they can do something regionally. And it doesn't make sense to stay in a higher education if they can, you know, enter the job market faster. So I think the real key here is making sure education has those transferable skills for students, and we remember their goals in mind.
You both make some really good points about this. And it's interesting to go immediately from a negative to a positive on the same issue and see them both so vividly. If in general, the idea of regional hubs is one that sort of depresses mobility, it's going to increase the competitiveness for students from other places. In other words, competition in the rest of the world will go up because there'll be fewer students leaving that regional area. And indeed, recruiting students from those regional hubs might be more challenging for people or schools that are outside of that region. So I could see that being an impact. And then on the UK side, with a connection that's so direct between coming in under a student visa, making some easy changes, and then staying on a work visa, But I could see that really causing problems in the recruitment side of things. And I wonder how we might screen candidates to better understand their ultimate motives. I wonder what you think about that.
I think that universities would have to be much more proactive in their screening process and asking of students what their plans would be post-graduation, and then during their time in their courses, sort of monitoring attendance, absence rates, those kind of things, and seeing where students start to be a little less active and where they may be falling off a little bit, and sort of engaging with them at that point and asking them, you know, what can we do differently?
It sure could pose a problem on the retention side. I mean, there are obviously some things, like you've suggested, Layla, that can be put in on the selection piece. And in South Korea, for example, the spaces allocated to universities for different majors is developed and given to those universities by the central government. And it's because they're doing some central planning with their future workforce needs. And so that kind of tight coordination really impacts the kinds of programs that can grow and prosper, and those that have to stay flat or possibly stagnate. I don't know that the UK is centrally planned from that standpoint, but it seems like there's a connection here that's much stronger than in the US.
Mm-hmm. On that note, it makes me think about within our IEM program, we have working professionals who have decided to pursue a graduate degree because they're looking for theory knowledge to accompany their experiences. And they didn't have that within their working force already. And so that's something to remind students who are looking to possibly drop out that they may enter the workforce, but without the skill set that they actually need.
That's a good question. What happens to those that leave for this visa change, and then when the economy contracts or those jobs dry up, what happens to them?
Yeah, without the degree, I feel like they have less credentials to support their next endeavors.
Well, this is an interesting set of articles, and I wonder if you see any other connections or any contradictions or anything else that you'd like to comment on about them.
Well, I found another interesting point is that for those regional hub cities, actually the most attractive university for the students and the parents is that actually they are Western branded university. For example, in Malaysia, it's not the local university who attract international students. It's actually the cross-border campus under the Nottingham University in the UK. So perhaps it's another signal for the world famous universities to think about. If they want to reach out to a wide range of international students, but the students prefer to go to the neighbor countries, so how about do a marketing strategy to create a cross-border campus in that regional cities?
You know, Flora, that's a really good point. Many years ago, there was a trend in international education to establish international branch campuses. And a lot of really high-level schools built many campuses around the country, including some in Southeast Asia and East Asia. And they seem to have gone through a life cycle where they were a great idea at the beginning, and then eventually they failed to recruit enough students to sustain those campuses. So what you're saying is that maybe the pendulum has swung back because of this regional preference or the idea of a regional hub, that maybe those branch campus ideas, if they're surviving, some of them still are, but if those branch campuses are still available or could be reconstituted, that might actually have a second life.
Well, I think the pandemic maybe just pulled the trigger for the next round of these activities.
Any last comments before we wrap up? All right. Hearing none. Thank you both for participating and contributing to this episode. I quite enjoyed the discussion and look forward to seeing how these issues play out in real life.
Thank you.
Thank you.